2FM. Thanks to the two Johnnies. It's Monday, the 24th of April, and this is Game On. After a weekend of wall-to-wall GAA action, we'll look back on all of the games with Peter Canavan and Niall Moran.
We'll also have Alison Miller looking back at the Women's Six Nations. Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly, our resident soccer gurus, will join us to look back at Manchester's dominance in the FA Cup quarterfinals and Arsenal's wobble in the Premier League. And I'll also have a little look ahead at Punchestown, seeing as you're not coming, Marie. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet Game On at 2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. We're back and we are fully functioning, which is very positive. Alan,
there's you yesterday. You're talking about technical issues. Like, I was listening to Sunday Sport and I could hear you. Then I flicked over to 2FM and you were on there. Like, I get abused for being everywhere. You were all over the shop yesterday.
I do a lot of jobs, Ruby.
Incredible stuff, Marie.
I'm incredible. Yes, let's take that. Speaking of incredible, Alan Cawley is with me here as well. How are you, Alan?
I'm good, Marie. Evening, Ruby. All is well.
How are you, Al?
Good, thanks. Nice weekend. Yeah, yourselves?
Survived.
Yeah, busy weekend, actually. Sport everywhere, as per usual, but enjoyable.
Ruby,
sure, we're going to get well stuck into it.
You have a birthday party?
We have. Elsa's 12 today, so birthday party yesterday, non-school day, and cousins are here today, so busy house, Marie. How's your house, Marie?
It's not great, Ruby. Let's not talk about it, though. Let's move on. It was a disappointing weekend of results all round.
The Clare footballers won.
The Clare footballers won. I was delighted for Colm Collins. Yes, that's a
Sligo GAA won.
There you go. Alan Cawley, another happy
man. And they were dominant against New York, weren't they?
And Kildare won.
They outclassed Wicklow.
Ruby, yeah, don't get me started on what I watched on Saturday, because the GAA folk won't be happy with what I have to say.
Go on, Al. Spit it out now.
A non-event.
Which was?
Sligo, New York.
Which was always going to be, wasn't it?
That's what I'm saying, but, like, you'd wonder what was going on with Leitrim, how they lost to New York, but, and I know Sligo can only beat what's put in front of them, but a non-event.
Funny, I was watching it, Marie. Maybe you're the complete GAA head here. I was watching it over the weekend and I was thinking, thank God there is a Tailteann Cup.
Well, there is one, which is...
There's some gulf in class between the teams, isn't there?
And Ruby, I've had this argument for years on the show here, and it always comes at this stage of the season, and there's this debate and this topic that will be raised throughout the next kind of 3, 4, 5 weeks when you see these kind of scorelines, and we always say the same things. And I've heard all the arguments from the players, and to be fair, I think the players are in favour of going against the best teams and testing themselves. I don't see the point of it myself when you're losing by 25, 26 points in some cases. And thankfully there is the Tailteann Cup, but why not just start with that?
Marie?
I think that tradition has a lot to do with it, and there is a lot of people who put huge amount of value in winning the Munster, Ulster, Leinster and Connacht titles. And when you look at Tipperary winning only a couple of years ago in Munster, and then you had Cavan in Ulster, that there is a belief for a lot of counties when they start out that they might have a chance of winning it. I don't think it's the same in Leinster with Dublin there, that it's been one-sided for such a long time now that I can't see that changing. But when the counties in Ulster,
well, I think there's
Connacht
only one chance, Ulster and Connacht.
Yeah.
The rest of them.
But I mean, if you said to Colm Collins, who you would just, more often than not, you would think Clare aren't going to get to a Munster final. If you asked him, does he want the chance to play in one? Absolutely. Like, they're trying to get it moved to Ennis now, to play Kerry there, to make an occasion of it. It's the very first Munster final he's ever been in 12 seasons since he's been manager. But every season he starts.
No, fairness, now, right. If a final's going to be a final, how can you play it in one county's home ground?
Well, look, it's because,
I suppose it happens to Dublin and Croke Park.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's because it's Kerry coming to town as well. And it would create a huge amount of,
yeah, and it'd be, I'm sure it, and it'd be great for Clare, and certainly I think we commented on the stint that Colm Collins has put in a few weeks back. Like, I would never begrudge that man with the amount of time and effort he's put in for years, but I just don't think it does the game any good when you see the scorelines, and like, none of them seem to be closing the gap, which is, how do you close the gap, you know? Like, I know it's a wider debate probably, but bar two provinces, like, you can say tradition, but bar two provinces, the rest of them are a walkover.
Move, Marie. Speaking about closing gaps, go to the next subject.
That brings us nicely along now to Alison Miller, former Ireland rugby player, who is on to talk to us about the Women's Six Nations and particularly the England-Ireland game. 48-0 win for England. The talk beforehand was that it could potentially be a record for England. It was not that. Ali, we're talking about whether or not teams who are underdogs, who are going into competitions with no chance of winning, want to be in it or should be in it. When you look at Ireland, you could put them into that conversation when you look at the Six Nations and where it is now, but I guarantee you that everyone playing for Ireland wants to be in the Six Nations, even if they are suffering 48-0 defeats.
Conversation there I was listening to you having, but like, one way looking at it is things change over years, and like a team that could be dominant 10 years ago might not be dominant in 10 years time. So we start taking teams out, moving things around, you know, things can change. But yeah, like the competitor in these sports people and in those sports teams, they still want to play against the best, because it doesn't matter what stage you are, you want to play against the best teams. Like, yeah, there is arguments for teams to play against teams that are more at their level. But at the same time, if you're competitive, you always have to kind of aspire to be better. And like, and you see in women's games, women's sports, sometimes that can change as well within into 2 or 3 years. So look, you're hoping that an Irish team that's lost Saturday 48-0, that hopefully things could be very different in like a shortage time of 2 to 3 to 4 years. So look, that's what you're hoping for.
Alison, I was reading Simon Middleton's comments about Ireland, and he compared them to Wales and looked at the progress Wales had made in 2 years and predicted Ireland, providing those in charge are willing to back it, believes that Ireland can do the same. Would you agree? Would you be as optimistic as he is?
Yeah, you have to be optimistic. And like, it's not that long ago that Ireland were competitive. I'm not even talking about competitive in terms of winning the Six Nations or winning Grand Slams. I mean competitive in beating Italy, Scotland, Wales, and maybe, you know, having it not being a huge score against England. So that's not that long ago. Like, so things can change in 2 to 3 years' time. Yeah, you look at Wales, they're a case in point, lost to Ireland. Can't remember the score. I think it was 48-0 in 2021. And then 2 years later, then they've turned that around with investment, with increased, you know, standards and training that come from professionalism. So yeah, you're hoping that that happens. And you need, like, at the end of the day, you need the Englands to be, the France to be ruthless, to be playing at their very best, because that's where you want. Like, there's a big, great spectacle when they're playing next week, hopefully, and that'll drive on the game and bring it on in 10 years' time to see where it could be at that. But if they are not really, like, we need those teams to be absolutely ruthless for everyone else to try and catch up. And because they're, especially England, they have done everything for the game that's driven it on so far. So, yeah, that's what it is. Every other team's just got to catch up and do their best. And it forces unions to really be ambitious and like not just do the bare minimum, be ambitious and look at things in a different way and look at things, what's best for the particular, you know, like, for example, Irish women's rugby, like, you know, what's the best way to approach Irish women's rugby? We've got something very advantageous in our country called Gaelic football. And that has been for many years really helped Irish women's. Like, you see someone like Niamh Briggs played for Gaelic football, unbelievable kicker, like, she was obviously a brilliant player and very complete, but yeah, her ability, her touchline conversion in 2014, you know, that's using a sport that we don't, that none of the rest of the countries have. So we got to use our strengths, and yeah, we're a small player pool, but make that an advantage in that you know your players and there's more can be done. So it's about being creative and ambitious and really going after that and what suits the women's game as well. You don't want to copy the men's game, even though they're doing really well. There is going to be slight differences and nuances in, well, I won't even say slight, I'll say big differences and nuances on how you approach the women's game.
And Ali, I think as well that it's important to make the game attractive to these players that we would hope to get to come into it, because you mentioned as well there isn't that player pool and we don't have enough girls at grassroots level coming through, and we're going to have to go and try and find players from elsewhere. But the problem is now that 5 years ago, we didn't have the women's AFL. So that is now a massive competitor. We didn't have cricket professional contracts for our cricketers. The women's football pathway wasn't as defined. They had their own issues as well. So now there's a huge amount of competition. And of course, there's always athletics and a lot of other sports as well. But it feels like there's a lot more competition now for the pool of athletes that we have that could be potential professionals. And when it doesn't feel like the support is there, it's very hard to try and get the interest of these women and girls to come over. I know Vicky Wall was linked and I think she would have been brilliant, but there probably needs to be a mindset change and maybe a rebranding or some sort of a marketing ploy to try and make it attractive for girls to play rugby. And I think when I was down at the game on Saturday and seeing England and the status that they had and the physique and the ability and just the attractiveness of the game that they played, you're right, they're doing it right. You look at that England team, and for girls in England, they want to go and play for them because it seems like they have everything. It seems like they have a brilliant setup and they have the athletes to back it up. But I just don't think we have that in Ireland. It doesn't feel like it's attractive to go and play rugby right now.
Yeah, and you know what? It was a few years ago, because I would have played Gaelic football. I remember one of the Leash girls who I'm very friendly with goes, "I feel like Alison now, it's more attractive to play rugby." And that was coming off the time when we were successful. So you probably got a lot of girls in around that time. And that wasn't even a deliberate strategy by the IRFU. It just happened because of success. So can you imagine with success? Well, with success brings interest. But with a deliberate, as you're saying, kind of make it attractive. And you're right, because unlike men's sports, women are probably going to make, young girls especially, probably going to make a different choice. And, if you're a boy, you're going to get paid professionally no matter what you do, regardless of the sport, because that's the way it is at the moment. And, if you're talented, but maybe women or girls make a slightly different choice based on who's successful at the moment. Like women's soccer is doing really well. Like traditionally, you might have got those girls that were going to AFL to come to rugby. So, there has to be huge efforts made. And I also think there is... Like, hopefully these jobs that are going to be advertised to try and, attract talent, hopefully they'll do that. And they really go around the country searching. I still think there can be some fast tracking done. Mm-hmm. You'll see in other countries, they do a lot of talent transferring from one sport to the other.
Yeah.
We don't really tend to do that really in this country. It happens by accident sometimes to some of our good athletes. But I don't think we do that. I think maybe we should go look at some of the countries and sports that have done that very well and see how they've done that. Because going from the country, you'll often maybe go to, say, a small rugby club, and you'll see, you might be doing a guest session, and you'll see some girl that's just on the off season from GA or soccer giving a bit of a laugh, and they don't realise how good they are. And they are not good technically. They might not know the language of the game, but you're like, my God, if someone worked with them intensively, like fast tracking, transferring them, they could be very successful and be a very good rugby player and make it attractive. I suppose all the negativity all the time, I don't know if that affects might affect young girls, the negativity all the time. I don't know. I can't put myself back there. If you just want to play, and I suppose what rugby has over other sports is more inclusive. If you look at a front row player that could be very, very skillful, very good technically, they might not just have, that's no disrespect to any front rowers out there that I know or anything like that, but they might not have, maybe get some texts off them. They might not have the speed for a sport like Gaelic football potentially, or soccer potentially, but it is a sport that is so, every position in the field requires different strengths. And you look at your wingers and, so explosive and fast, and, there's girls there that might be playing. I've seen, because I was involved in athletics in St. Albans, give you a shout out there. I have seen potentially girls there are very fast international athletes that might have played some Gaelic football, and they potentially could turn to athletics and turn to rugby and be very good. So rugby has got that. What we call it, inclusivity in all positions across the pitch, that maybe other sports don't have. And I'll say that's a massive advantage that they got to use. And kind of get out there and, yeah, get the kind of momentum going again. Like, obviously, we're not being successful on the pitch and that will have an impact. But there's so many creative ways and you just got to sit down and get good people involved. There's great people involved that have come through the women's game that unfortunately are not working in it or maybe were never approached. And, oh, I'd love to see them working in it because they've got knowledge, they've got skills, expertise. Some of them even have qualifications. And you want people you want people that are passionate about it, that are genuinely doing it, yes, as a job, but also as a passion. If you could put those two together, I think you got a great combination there, you know.
For sure. And just before we move on from this, just on the game itself, it was 48-0. There was an expectation that it could have been more, but it seems like there was some progress made from Ireland. And I don't want to sound condescending, but we have to look at the game itself and what Ireland did on the pitch.
Yeah, like there was big talk about this could be the biggest defeat yet. And yet they're their first team in this championship to keep England under 50 points. Yes, they didn't score. And the attack, Ireland's attack in general, is something they're really going to have to work on because they're not scoring tries. They've scored one try against Wales, a penalty try against Italy, and a penalty against France, and no try against England. So that's obviously a huge area. But the defence was good. Like it, obviously, they missed tackles, but every team in the championship that are going to play England, maybe with the exception of France, are going to have high stats on missed tackles. But they did put England under pressure and make England, you know, have the knock-ons. And, you know, we saw a lot of England, you know, they were passing the ball over the touchline, different things like that. And Ireland had some nice defensive sets where they turned the ball over. And, yeah, their defence looked much better. England, I will have to say, I'll be honest, they weren't at their best. But that was down to Ireland too. So huge improvements. Like their scrum has... Like one massive thing that was like poor for the last even 3 or 4 years, even when Ireland were more competitive, they had an inability to defend them all, and that has really improved. So like they've looked at that and go, right, we need to work on it. That's improved. Their scrum has become better. Their breakdown had improved a lot from the Italy game. The height was lowered. You know, their ruck ball was faster. Now we hadn't got many opportunities to attack. So, and then the opportunities we did have to attack, we just took the wrong options when we did get an opportunity. Line out needs work, but yeah, there was an improvement. So, and people will come out and say, oh, how can you say that for a team that's losing 48-0? But that's, you have to look at that. Where this team are at, you have to look at, literally bring it back to the basics. What have they improved on from the Wales game, which was the first game, and they have certainly improved aspects, you know, of their performance.
Yeah, because there's no point sitting here giving out game after game. Like, that doesn't achieve anything. But like, again, as I started at the top of saying that England were awesome and they were brilliant to watch, and there's 50,000, over 50,000 tickets sold for the England-France game in Twickenham next week. So it just shows that the status of the game is growing and that there's lots of people who want to play it, want to watch it and are interested in it, and we hope that Ireland catch up soon. But we will be tuning in to watch that game as well, because I'd say it's going to be brilliant. Ali, thank you as always for joining us, and we will be talking to you again soon, no doubt. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. Alan Cawley is standing by to talk football, and Stephen Kelly will also join us. Now, welcome back. We're going to turn our attention to football. Some news just in. Christian Stellini has been sacked as Tottenham's acting head coach as chairman Daniel Levy announced Ryan Mason will take over after that unacceptable defeat at Newcastle. Alan.
Marie, where will I start?
For Spurs fans.
I watched the match and... it was just, like you can see in the statement that was released today, obviously it was wholly unacceptable. I've never seen a team at any level to be five down after 20 minutes in the manner that they were. It was just incredible, Marie, what I was watching. And it was beyond belief, really. And the funny thing about it as well is that I wasn't all that surprised, because we've seen this with Spurs before and on numerous times. Obviously, Conte had the rant earlier in the season, basically telling us what kind of characters these people are, these players, and obviously we see it for ourselves with our own eyes. I was in Milan the night they went out on a whimper in the Champions League as well, so I've seen it. I've seen it last year as well when I was over there. and you would have to question, and the biggest insult you could ever throw at a player is when you're questioning their character, and every one of them should be questioned today because it was absolutely disgraceful. That's not to take away from Newcastle, who were very good on the day as well and are obviously having a great season, but the manner in which, there's a way of losing a football match, Marie, and I have an issue with Stellini. Obviously he's gone now, he should have went with Conte.
That's true,
because he came in with Conte, and I have a major issue with that, even in terms of the optics. He, the only reason he was ever at Spurs was because Conte brought him in, and he should have remained loyal to Conte. That when Conte left, he should have left as well, in my view. So obviously he's gone now, Ryan Mason will come in, but I think the damage it has done to some of those players and those individuals who already were having serious questions thrown at them, is just, I'm not sure how some of them can come back from it.
What do you mean come back from it? They make an effort for a start to be the first thing. I mean, they're professionals, is that not what they do?
Yeah, 100% Ruby, but the point I'm making about how these, like, there's certain individuals in that team who, this isn't the first time I've seen it with them. The likes of Dyer, Lloris, major questions over him. I even was disappointed with Stellini taking off the young kid. He should have made a statement and taken off two or three of the senior pros. The young kid, Pape Sarr, was the easy target to take off after 20 minutes as well. So he even wilted the manager as well, Stellini, and I'm not surprised. As I said, he should have went with Conte. But they were an absolute disgrace, as everybody has said and everybody's seen yesterday. They were a disgrace, and it's not the first time.
Could this be the start, or probably won't be, but should it be the start of managers getting back the power over the players?
I'm not sure, Ruby, because you look at a couple of the individuals that have already managed at that football club, in terms of Jose Mourinho and Conte, two of probably the toughest, most sternest, powerful managers that we've seen in recent times, and even they had major issues with a lot of these individuals and players, and even Conte, to the point where he was trying to paper over the cracks for so long that he actually blew a gasket in that game against Southampton when they relinquished the lead 3-1 up, couldn't manage the game, couldn't see it out. Again, questioning their attitude, questioning their approach, and even when you see the likes of him and Mourinho, as I said, having problems with the likes of these players, I'm not sure. Like, Levy has to take some blame as well. Who do you bring in? Obviously there's major question marks over, is it Nagelsmann, Pochettino? There's names being linked with the job, and he should have, before. I know the Conte thing probably came with a bit of an outburst, but if he was going to sack Conte, you should have had someone lined up. You might as well have left Conte there, even though people would say it was untenable after some of the statements that he made. But he's been proved right, because the first thing I thought when I was watching this yesterday, and it's not the first time I've said it, is how right was Conte?
Stephen Kelly joins us now as well. Stephen, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's like, the game is deplorable. Like, the manner of the defeat is, you're watching it going, am I actually watching this game? I'm watching on the tens football. Am I watching, like, I'm watching my little boys team, or am I watching Tottenham, who are, you know, a team that are supposed to be pushing for Champions League? And then Stellini going today is inevitable. He had to go on the back of that, but whether he should have ever been there, like, logically, I saw why they put him in. I kind of thought they had a boost when he took over for Conte. Certain players performed better, and they had the win against City and Chelsea and West Ham. I go, you know what, maybe they're a little more relaxed with him in charge. But since he's been in, they've not done anything for him. You said it, down in two words, and I hate talking about that, down in tools, but that's what it seemed like yesterday. They look like they're put into a back four for the first time ever. People are screaming at them to play that shape, so they have an extra body in midfield, and they just completely capitulate. They looked like they were rabbits in headlights when they conceded the first two goals. They had no idea what they were going to do. It was shocking. But like, Tottenham, from the board's point of view, they have to go get a manager. Just go get someone, because they're gonna miss out on some serious candidates, because they're not gonna want that Tottenham job, because it can't provide for them Champions League football.
Is soccer the only sport where those on the pitch that make all the mistakes and don't put in the effort never seem to carry the can? So always the fella on the sideline that gets to blame.
No, this is the thing. I think the managers 100% will get, are where the book stops, because they're the ones that are in charge. But the players have to be responsible. And I think what it is because they seem like they're not responsible, because they're earning such good wages, and they continually seem to get chances to perform at that level. But your stock drops as a player, and it's a short window. So at some point, and maybe the finances that are in the game mean that once you get to the top, even if you drop off, you never financially drop off to a way that you would have seen in the past. But when it comes to what level you're playing at, if you perform poorly, at some point there's going to be a drop off, and who wants you? Who's going to pick you? Your international career will suffer, then your club career will suffer, and all those things will go their way. Can you get yourself back up? Maybe. But at some point there's going to be a cut off where you're no longer a desirable footballer for a team at the top level.
Stephen, you've been there in the dressing room scenario like that. Is it just culture? Is the culture off? What is it, and how can it be fixed?
honestly, it's so hard because genuinely, I was racking my brain thinking what games I've been involved where that's actually happened to me. I've never been in a game where I've conceded that many goals so short. I've been in games where I've played terribly bad. Everybody has. I've been in games where I've looked at and thought, oh my God. And then the next day in the analysis meeting, I'm sitting there and you're cringing at the stuff you've done. You've gone, oh, how did I do that? Why did I do that? But then it's about you being big enough to own up to it, admit it, look it in the face, and then go out the next day and then try hard and work hard. And will those players do that? Will they actually take on board that they messed up and that they need to improve? And it's about individuals in the change room, you know, picking each other out, digging each other, having a go, having an argument, having a fight. You know, I mean, that this happens and it gets tense, but then sometimes that's what it needs for the team to come together.
But there's a difference, sorry, in a fella making a mistake than a fella not trying. And that's the problem that's the problem with these Spurs players, because as I said, anybody can make a mistake. We've all seen that at no matter what level you play at, and an honest, genuine mistake. But how many times have we seen these players throw the towel in now? And as Stephen said, the keep seem to get in chances. The likes of Dyer, he's the one that stands out for me, like, you know, and he's the one pointing fingers at everybody else. But all the managers have played him. Everyone that's come in has played him, which surprises me, to be honest with you. But it was just a total lack of professionalism. A total lack of professionalism. As I said, they were a disgrace.
Stephen, from your point of view, was it made a little bit better given the fact that Arsenal look like they're trying everything they can to throw away this league?
Every cloud, isn't it? It's a sad day, isn't it, that to think that the only thing that we're clinging on to as Spurs fans is that Arsenal might not win the title, which when even in itself, the fact that they're pushing for a title is quite a bad thing. But yeah, it looks like they... You know, we've been talking about for weeks this game on Wednesday. We've been talking about how this is going to be the decider. This is going to make a difference. And you're looking at that game now and you're kind of thinking, you can't look past City. You really can't look past City winning that match and then going on to win every game between now and the rest of the season. And it's their title. Whether Arsenal have got the ability to pick up every point between now and then, I just don't think they do. I think they've had an unbelievable season. Outshone everything they could have imagined. But I think they'll come up short.
Alan?
I'd have bottled it. Just come out and say it. Just, yeah, that's it. Like, yeah, it's, yeah, like what the Arsenal one, the Liverpool game, you could maybe allow for Liverpool coming back at Anfield away from home. Obviously, a very good side. But then the next two fixtures, to be two up at West Ham, there's no excuse for that whatsoever. And they had plenty of time to get back into the game, even when West Ham went 2-2. And then to be two down to Southampton at home the other night, again, they showed a bit of fight to come back. But they've blown it. They've absolutely blown it, Arsenal.
They showed more than a bit of fight. 3-1 down, like with 2 minutes to go, they never gave up. Like, to me, like, looking in, I don't mind whether it's City or Arsenal win it, but for the pure drive that Arsenal had to get back and still go chasing for a winner in injury time, but like, I think you got to tip your cap to that. I'd much prefer to be saying, I know, I don't agree with you saying Arsenal have bottled it. At least they're up there and trying their socks off. Just look at Spurs. They're a bleeding disgrace. Yeah, not what Arsenal are doing.
We've already said they're a disgrace. But
but you can't put the two of them together and say Arsenal have bottled it. No, I don't agree with you.
They have bottled it because the position they found themselves in, the points deficit that they have and the cushion that they had, and here we're at the business end now. Obviously, a lot of those players have never been in that position. They've done great to get themselves into that position, but to be two up against West Ham and blow it, which they did, and then the other night against Southampton, the worst team in the league, bottom of the table, to be two down. It's easy to come back and fight back, obviously, and that was the only reaction you were going to get from them. The point is, they should never have been in that position in the first place. You wouldn't see Man City down 2 down to Southampton or 3 down, and that's the difference. And as I said, they were top of the league, bottled it.
The air is human, and that's what Aaron Ramsdale did.
Unless
I was watching a different game now, lads.
Yeah, no, they made mistakes, and I think from Arsenal's point of view, again, I think bottling it, and even as a Spurs fan, I really want to say it. I want to just throw on them that they bottled it. And the way I think last season they bottled the Champions League position. But I think when it comes to it, and you've not been in that position for a long time, and you have someone like Man City breathing down your necks, and they just don't look to, they don't skip a beat. They don't miss. And those little chances where Arsenal had to just push that a little bit forward to make it a little bit more secure, and they missed out on them. That little bit of indecision will creep into their mindset. And there's some young players there that have, like I said, never been in this position before, but they're the ones that are rising to occasion. And I have to admit, I was looking at the game thinking they've thrown it, and then to come back the way they did in the manner they did, they should have won the game. An extra 10 minutes that game, they would have won it against a much lesser side, granted. But yeah, I still think that City are just the juggernaut, and they're a hard team to stop.
Okay, since we're all having different views here, I'm going to ask the three of you, who's going to win on Wednesday between City and Arsenal, Alan?
City, but it could actually suit Arsenal to come in as a bit of an underdog.
Oh, get off the fence, will you?
I've already told you my feelings.
Ruby?
Arsenal, but City, but Arsenal, get off the fence, Colly, will you?
I've already told you, bottle it.
I watched City last week when they were 3-1 up and they were clinging on. I'm not sure they're just as bomb-proof under pressure as everyone else does, so...
I've proved it year after year.
Stephen, you have the deciding vote here now. Who do you think is going to win?
City. City win it.
2-1. Well, I'm going to go with Ruby. I'm going to go with Arsenal.
I'm like Kevin Keegan. I love it.
Arteta needs to come out with one of them speeches.
Okay, lads. All right, look, Wednesday is going to be an absolute cracker. Can't wait for it and can't wait
next
to have the race.
Monday's going
to
be a cracker.
Exactly, yeah. Right, we're going to take a very quick break, but stay with us. Peter Canavan is coming up. Game on 2FM. Now, welcome back. It is time to take a breath after that soccer chat and turn our attention to Gaelic football. I'm delighted to say that Peter Canavan is with us on the line. Peter, how are you?
Evening, Marie.
We were having a bit of a chat at the top of the show about whether or not the championship or the football season after the league should be tiered from the start, and whether teams should get a chance in the every team should get a chance in the Sam Maguire. What do you reckon, Peter?
No, I think it badly needed to be tiered, for the simple reason that there was too many, you know, championship games that are very one-sided, and you look at what's happening, you know, in some cases already. Kerry, the facile victory they had, Dublin's game with Leash yesterday, when you have Division 1 team normally playing again a Division 3 or 4, there's only going to be one outcome, and I don't know if the Division 3 or Division 4 teams are going to gain much, you know, from that. Certainly we've seen, look at the National League, where teams are playing against teams of similar ilk. They're competitive, and you know, across all divisions, the games are competitive, and teams will learn as a result of that, and they have hope. They have, at the beginning of the league, virtually every team has a realistic opportunity of say, okay, we'll get promoted or we can win this league. But as soon as the league's over, how many teams can say, well, that's us, you know, the way it was, they would say, that's us. There's not a chance that we're going to, you know, win the Sam Maguire. So with the introduction of the Tailteann Cup, I think that's it gives a lot of those teams in Division 3 and 4 some hope now. The players will not, you know, head away or whatever. They're taking part in a competition that they believe they can win. And regarding the debate on the merits of the provincial championships, I totally get it why people believe that it should be straight in from the league, straight into to tiered system. But We have a proud history in the GAA, and I've spoken before about the importance of the provincial medals that I have, and you know, something that you will treasure, those games that we played. So I think it would be, at this stage, it would be a risk just to throw everything out. I know we're trying to get the best of both worlds at the minute, and I think we should give it time. We should give it time and see if it works. Maybe a case and 2 or 3 years where you have teams that disregard the provincial, you know, playing in the provincial competition and putting out, you know, a second-rate team, then if that's the case, it's got to go. But at the minute, Marie, you look at, you know, Throne and Monaghan last week, were those teams thinking of the bigger picture, or were they trying to win a provincial title? Roscommon and Galway yesterday, were they thinking of the bigger picture, or was their minds and their focus firmly set on winning provincial honours? So I think it does mean something to teams at the minute to win a provincial medal. And until such times that's not the case, then I think we should give it a chance at least.
Well, he's straight out of the water, but it makes perfect sense, Peter. But looking back at the weekends from the game, and things just seem to go from bad to worse for Donegal.
That's right, Ruby. I wasn't surprised that Down won it. I was surprised that they won it so easily at the finish up, 2-13 to 1-11. And if Donegal hadn't got off to such a good start, there may have been more in it. you can argue about things behind the scenes not going well and whatnot, but you simply don't have the quality of players. You're talking leaders within that setup, and Neil McGee, Michael Murphy, Ryan McHugh, those boys aren't there. Paddy McGrady's out injured, and it's just too big of a hole to fill. And again, when the chips were down yesterday, you have to question the leadership within the Donegal group. I felt there wasn't enough. They didn't really look as if they were going to turn the deficit around, and they were well beaten by a team that's very much in the up.
I'm going to ask you now about Galway and Roscommon, and particularly Peter, about the role of Shane Walsh as someone who was well able to get scores and cause carnage to defenders in the championship for years. What do you think Shane Walsh should be doing? What do you think his best role is? Because it's difficult with Damien Comer there and him playing so well.
Well, it's a case of getting the two boys playing well together. That's what the challenge facing Pádraig Joyce. When Damien Comer was in the All-Ireland final, if you recall, he was moved further out the pitch. He was playing a team role, and Shane was playing closer to goal because they felt had a better chance of exploiting Kerry's weaknesses. And they were proven right. Shane Walsh was superb, but Damien was very quiet. Yesterday it was all the way around, and in other games before this, you could argue the same, maybe that the two of them have yet to play really well at the same time. So that's something for us to look forward to whenever that does happen. I think Damien Comer is a natural full forward in terms of his ball winning ability and his presence in there. Just take a look at the goal that he got. It's anticipation of the post. He was strong enough to win it and good enough to put it away. Exceptional footballer. Whereas with Shane Walsh, he can play inside without a doubt. We've witnessed mm-hmm. that. But I think there's more to his game, and that he's very mobile and well able to play further out the pitch. But I would say, yes, Pádraig would want him to be a link man and setting up play and all the rest, but he would want him getting on a few scores. But he had a few shots. Another day, those balls would be going over the bar, so I wouldn't be pressing the alarm button just yet.
Don't be pressing the alarm button just yet, but did the alarm bell ring for everybody watching Dublin yesterday?
I don't know, Ruby. The fact that the Dublin teams of old, probably that's the way they would have put teams away. And we haven't seen this from Dublin for two or three years. But any team that scores 4:30, and I'm not too sure that most of that scored maybe at half-time. Without a doubt, that would give you an indication that they're becoming goal-hungry again, and they're now like a team that's playing for positions again the way they used to. And that doesn't augur well for the rest of the teams in Leinster and certainly the rest of the teams in the All-Ireland. I said at the start of the year they would still be in at the end of the league, even though they didn't or they got out of Division 2 okay, but they weren't brilliant. I still felt that there was more in them, and they are a team very much on the up, and they are going to be there at the end of it. And whoever's going to win the All-Ireland are going to have to beat Dublin.
I think when you look at the bench as well that they had coming on, like Howard Merchant, Costello, Diaz, Rock, it was pretty frightening stuff. And just before we finish up, Peter, just a word on the Offaly-Meath game. Obviously, it's not where Meath want to be, and huge credit to Offaly, but there's probably a lot of questions for Colm O'Rourke to answer, and I'd say some of them he won't be able to answer, and it's probably going to be a case where there's a lot of work needs to be done even outside of the inter-county setup across the county.
Yes, absolutely. I would say Colm felt compelled that he had to take the job because there certainly wasn't a queue lining up to take this Meath team. There was a consensus, at the start of the year or whenever he took it. Was the talent there? Probably not. So, it a very difficult job to begin with. He did get a bounce from them at the start, but the fact that they haven't responded, mid-season on would be very disappointing from his point of view. You've got to compliment and congratulate Offaly. And once again, it goes to show that when a team have a cause, and certainly they were dealt a very severe blow during the league, And as a group of players, they have responded. And I thought the manner in which they played and the heart and determination was something to behold. And that's what got them over the line. But yes, you contrast that with Meath, and that there's got to be a rebuilding process. They had a good minor team a few years ago. And I would say Colm has got to look at the bigger picture here. And there's no guarantee that they're going to do well. They may not be in the top two or three teams to be winning the Tailteann Cup. They will have a struggle on their hands there. But look, that's a competition. That's where they're at the minute. And he'll have a hell of a job to try and turn that around.
He most certainly will. Peter Canavan, thanks a million for taking our call. We have a quick break to take.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back. It's now time to turn our attention to hurling. I'm delighted to say that Niall Moran joins us on the line. Niall, we've had our first weekend of championship. Did it deliver?
Munster, most definitely so. Leinster, probably not so much. Maybe in tandem with the kind of the pre-championship kind of previews. I suppose the championship got off to a little bit of a whimper above in Galway on Saturday night. I suppose you'd have to probably question the timing of a game, 4:30 Saturday evening in what was, do you know what I mean, the top of the bill, pairing above in Leinster. I suppose, look, Wexford, they got two early goals, but I don't think they delivered a whole pile thereafter. But it's safe to say that it really took off yesterday, and none more so than in Cusick Park.
Yeah, it was one of those days now where you kind of couldn't take your eyes off it. But it was really Waterford and Limerick that I found to be the most compelling, Niall, just because of the amount of drama and chaos that was around it. And I guess the way the game took off as well, for a while there I thought that Waterford weren't going to be able to get much out of the game, but they were able to get back into it, and I felt they had Limerick rattled anyway.
Yeah, I suppose, look, so Limerick dealt with the early onslaught fairly well. In fairness to Fitzy, he threw kitchen sink at him in terms of tactics. He overloaded particular sides on occasion. He put 5 inside in the full forward line on occasion off puckouts. He had 7 inside in his 45 on puckouts. So to be fair to him, he tried it, but really after 20 minutes, Marie, like, Limerick were fully in control. They were 1-8, 2 points up. And I suppose maybe, look, it's no different. Probably a trait that probably came through in him is that they probably grew a little bit just overconfident. They kind of became a little bit comfortable in the situation that they were. And I suppose even listening to a kind of talk given by Paul Carrington there last week, he was talking about when players are overconfident, and I suppose a little bit of fear sets in, that sometimes it can kind of lead to a kind of a reaction or an explosion. And I think in Limerick's case, we kind of saw that, whereby they kind of took their foot off the pedal and Waterford came at them with a real challenge. And then Limerick probably did a lot of things that were uncharacteristic by their standards. And I suppose, look, for a finish, you were probably left hanging on for dear life. Waterford will regret an awful lot of their wides, the nature of them, both at the start of the second half and at the end of the half. And look, Waterford will have regrets, and they might carry those regrets later on in the summer when, if they don't get results against the likes of Cork or Tip.
You're going to need 3 wins in Munster to get yourself to a Munster final. So it's a funny one. I thought the same as you when you answered the question I was going to ask you. Like, Waterford, Limerick let Waterford back into it and then had to rally. At the very end, yeah, maybe. But you, as a Limerick man, did you ever think the result wasn't going to go Limerick's way? I didn't, as a neutral watching it.
Yeah, with this Limerick team, no, I didn't. I still, like, I don't mean inevitable, but I suppose, look, Ruby, it's like everything in sport. It was like Kerry winning the 5 in a row in 82. It was on TV there last night, and I'm sure no Kerry man thought that Offaly would pick him off, but you get suckered at the very end and you don't have time to recover, and that's what happens in sport. And do you know what I mean? So, like, you again, yeah, in real time, it's grand from the comfort of a seat above in the stand saying, oh, they won't be beaten. But I'm sure for John Kiley and Paul Kinnerk down the line, it was quite the opposite. And I suppose, like I said there, when things start happening that can become out of your control, do you know what I mean? You're left running, the kind of left kind of clinging on to luck. And look, Waterford, to be fair to them, they were excellently set up. They really went toe to toe. They were very, do you know what I mean? They're very combative in terms of how they defended, like the Keane Lynch, like the Callum Lyons, was really, really excellent on them. And I suppose, look, there's a blueprint there for teams to be competitive at Limerick going forward. But I do think that will raise the reaction out of Limerick too, because, do you know what I mean? I suppose just some of their deliveries and things were uncharacteristic by their standards.
So we just lost Niall momentarily there, and he's switching from an internet line to a phone line, but I think we have him back. Niall, were you slightly aggrieved this morning as a Limerick man to hear the furore about the ferocity of Limerick's play, or is that just part of being champions?
Not at all, Ruby. So I'm probably not a snowflake in the sense of it. I don't really follow a whole pile of social media. So, yeah, look, again, yeah, there was belts thrown on both sides, okay, and I know people look back last night
And I suppose they picked up on maybe the best of Seamus Flanagan might have passed the goals for be sending off. And in the same breath, I suppose the Waterford official was penalised for what happened. Do you know what? That's championship. So that's what we give out in the league about not having intensity. Now that we ratchet up the intensity and guys are fighting for their lives. And again, it would be like you don't give your whole life something and not give your all and everything when you're in the heat of the battle. And so what people sometimes don't realise is when you're there, like the action is thin. You're trying to survive. People can't say that when you go to sentence, you try to perform. And so the first thing that you have to do is try to survive. And so it's like, look, these things happen to survive. You know, the university opponent, you do whatever you can to get taken advantage of them. And yeah, in an ideal world, in a sanitary world, you'd say that there was never a bell thrown. But any of the classic games we've had have loads of incidents like that. So yeah, as a Limerick person, but I don't think they're really fair, to be honest. And looking at the commentary in the newspapers even yesterday, I don't think David Fitz or John Kiley had any comment really on it. They appreciated the spirit of how it was delivered. So, no, they won't be too worried.
I think it's simply technology, Niall. I think nothing has changed, only we all at home can see it all much clearer now, and people seem to think it's something new. But it hasn't changed. It's always been the same, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, again, like that, I said, I saw a clip there last night in Team G, that looked at the 82, I think it was maybe the most final was on. I'm not sure it was Paddy Shane doing that, but they literally clocked each other, and Paddy Shane was sent off. So, you know, look, technology, yeah, and again, everyone wants to find it, and everyone's an expert now because they're doing so much commentary on it, but in my you do what you've if you're giving your life up to something, you've got to perform in the best. And yeah, so as long as you get a win at the end of it, I don't think either of those teams have been too concerned. And I know that some of your listeners might disagree with it, that we should have the perfect game of hurling and that we should be role models to everybody else. But these lads are all role models in everything what they do every day. And just because they step over the line and, you know what I mean, do something that might be deemed unsavoury in a sanitised environment, it doesn't take away from my kind of admiration for these boys. Like, and just watch them up close and personally, that's the battle royale. That's why people love hurling. And I take it every day above a sanitised game.
And there's going to be plenty more battles over the next few weeks, particularly in Munster, when you're given take into account the intensity that we saw yesterday. But Clare are going to have to go now and take on Limerick. And after their performance against Tipperary yesterday, Niall, do you think that they're going to be able to put up a challenge?
Definitely. So the commentary around it was that went and blew Clare away, but even like when they went 1-3 to no score up, Clare came back, went a level again. And so it was Barry Hogan's kind of blocking Aidan McCarthy just before half time. They would have had three goals in the space of 5 minutes. They'd have overturned in a 10-point deficit. So like, there's huge positives there for Clare. Yeah, the obvious thing was they made a couple of criminal errors, and I'm not going to point people out. So what I mean, they made a few errors that if they tidy those up, then instead of 5 goals conceded, you would have had 2 goals conceded, and the outlook is very different. But I suppose the key for management players and the Clare public is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. They did an awful lot of very, very good things last Sunday. And again, like, given the record against Limerick last year and given the record in general in the Gaelic grounds, they shouldn't probably be coming with any fear either. And it makes for an intriguing game. Limerick could be a great place to be next weekend with the great Limerick run, and then that match on Saturday night. It'll be superb atmosphere. It'll be really white heat this championship. And look, there is a danger for Clare if they do lose, they are out of it. But I think they've started coming back into the mixer. Again, they'll tidy up a couple of sloppy errors. They won't be very far away from beating Limerick. And I think John Kiley is forearmed or forewarned. So we were warned yesterday about what's coming.
I love Liam Cahill's quote: "We're not there to over elaborate the game of hurling." Is that the way they played?
Stay true to themselves. That's Tipperary. I spoke earlier on about in the league about it. They scored 14 goals in the league, and even going back there a number of years ago, Tip 20s won the All-Ireland, they scored 19 goals in 4 games. They stay true to what they are. They took them on. They went at them at pace down the middle. And again, they had nothing to fear. And I suppose, look, he had these boys lightly as minors in 20s and carried right through, even seeing the buy-in to lads into the panel this year, lads who went away last year to States. They're all back. And he's getting the best. He's trying to use some of his better players in their best kind of roles. And even in terms of Jake Morris, he played at the edge of the D as a kind of a roaming corner forward. That's what suits his game best. It allowed him to get on a bit of ball. And again, I see kind of similarities in 2001. Tip threw an awful lot of tables when they went down to play Clare and Port Creeve in the first round of the championship in 2001 under Nicky English. They went down to win All-Ireland against the Head. Yesterday, he had 5 debutants in Tipperary, and look, that'll do them the world of good going forward. But again, look, Munster is a hotbed and it's definitely going to come down to the last day. And you just wonder with scoring difference coming to it, if, do you know what I mean, if you have a particular team that are out of it by the last round, but could scoring difference really be the deciding factor for teams kind of getting through with 1-3 teams?
Niall, from what you saw in Leinster, Antrim, Dublin, Galway, Wexford, Westmeath, Kilkenny, what was your biggest takeaway?
As I said to you, look, Wexford were very, very disappointing. Like, even in terms of Galway, like, they probably just did upwards of 40, 43 or 4 shots. Do you know what I mean? And even after scores, like, you know, 60, nearly 2/3 of them came from turnovers. And I suppose at inter-county level for Wexford, like, that kind of creates the errors. Now, again, look, to be fair to Wexford, they're still down as whatever else. But, like, with 20 minutes gone in that game last day, it was over. It's only, it was over. Galway have a lot of positives. Obviously, Evan Dryden took a lot of the plaudits, rightly so. And again, you know what I mean? I suppose they have different challenges. Kenny are coming next for them.